Well, the Coalition has been quick to pounce on Anthony Albanese's unemployment gaffe, saying that it shows he can't be trusted to keep workers in jobs, and using it as an opportunity to make an announcement about jobs targets, about creation of new jobs today. The Coalition wanted the election campaign to be squarely on these issues around the economy. And that's what it's sought to do. The Finance Minister, Simon Birmingham, is our next guest. He's on his way, I believe, to the studio. Just a couple of texts from you this morning. I've said it once and I'll say it again. You're like a dog with a bone. You don't interview Morrison like that. You're getting too big in the head, becoming Miss ABC, popping up everywhere. Well, there you go. I just read that randomly. Hadn't read it before. Yeah, here I am. Look, Scott Morrison has been invited on the program. We will invite him every single day of the campaign because he's the Prime Minister and should undergo rigorous questioning, of course. Now, the Finance Minister, he is very much in the government. Simon Birmingham joins me now. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Patricia. Great to be with you.
Is it really a hanging offence when a politician has a momentary brain freeze? As John Howard said, no less, he said, so what?
Patricia, we can all make mistakes and forget a figure here or there. That is true. Australians will make their own assessment of competence. Perhaps what worries me more in terms of coverage over the last 24 hours is the front page story on the Financial Review, which shows that Mr. Albanese has repeatedly made statements around the nature of the Australian labour market that are just wrong and have been assessed to be wrong by the University of Melbourne's analysis of Australian Bureau of Stats figures. And so, you know, that's just a deeper demonstration that that this is a labour leader who doesn't really understand the economy and who doesn't have a clear plan for managing the economy.
On that, I addressed that very specifically, and clearly Labor is arguing that actually it's a narrow understanding of what casualisation is. That's what Labor's arguing. So actually perhaps the figures you're referring to are different.
Well, they're not our figures. They're figures that have been undertaken by the ABS and then analysed by the University of Melbourne. So this is not a coalition or a government story. It's a story running in the Financial Review using that Uni of Melbourne ABS analysis and data. And ultimately, two-thirds of the 1.7 million jobs, roughly, that we've created have been full-time jobs during our term in office. And what we have managed to do is provide more job opportunities and more job certainty and security for many Australians as a result of that.
A few months ago, the Prime Minister couldn't answer how much a litre of petrol and a loaf of bread both cost. Your side of politics has been making much of what Anthony Albanese did in his brain freeze yesterday. Do you apply the same measure to the Prime Minister, that he's unfit to manage the economy because he didn't know those things?
As did Patricia, Australians will make their own judgment around competence. And indeed the way in which you handle issues like this and how you respond when you don't necessarily remember a figure or have that data. But more importantly, Australians should form their assessment based on the competing plans for Australia. And our plan is one that has delivered an unemployment rate down from 5.7% when we were elected to 4% now, a close to 50-year low. And we're demonstrating today our plans for a further 1.3 million jobs to be created over the next 5 years, and that's building on our investments through our modern manufacturing strategy, through our digital economy strategy, through our Agriculture 2030 strategy, all of them with clear investments in areas from skills to technology to infrastructure that are there to help support continued growth of jobs, of full-time jobs, and driving wages growth across the Australian economy.
This jobs pledge you're making today, it's similar to your January 2019 pledge to create 1.25 million jobs over 5 years. I understand that actual promise is having difficulty being fulfilled. Employment is only up by 513,000 jobs since May 2019. So what jobs are you referring to then?
Well, Patricia, since May 2019, we've of course lived through a global pandemic, and what we managed to do there was avert the loss of some 700,000 jobs through policies like JobKeeper. And in fact, we've come back with 370,000 more jobs following COVID than we had before COVID across the Australian economy. And that's one of very few countries in the world that have been able to come out the other side of COVID with a stronger economy, faster rates of growth, and more people in work than we had beforehand. So our performance there is one where, once again, we've demonstrated an ability to navigate these circumstances. And we've also done so showing a discipline during it. During the course of COVID-19, we had a Labor Party who called for us to keep JobKeeper in place, to keep rates of JobKeeper higher. And we had the discipline to turn that spending off. Okay. And in this election campaign, the choice is also framed by a Labor Party with a bunch of vague spending promises could add a further $302 billion to government spending over the next decade. And with that,
let me get in here. We are short on time, and I really want to ask this question. You've put $300 billion price tag on a number of Labor policies, such as better paid parental leave and childcare. Jim Chalmers literally laughed when I put that to him. How have you come up with such an astronomical figure when a number of the policies, such as Labor saying everyone on job seekers should be above the poverty line, are simply aspirational?
Well, this is a part we're seeing of the way the Labor Party's running this campaign. Now, they go out there and make these vague commitments, call them aspirational, but then won't actually put costed policies towards them. So are these Labor policies and promises, or are they not? That's for Mr Albanese, Mr Chalmers and the rest of their team to answer. They're the ones who put these promises into their party platform. They're the ones who cite them when they run around the country in their rhetoric and interviews. And so they're trying to lead Australians into thinking that this is what they'll deliver. If they're their policies, then they should cost them, which on our analysis comes up to greater than $300 billion.
Which they contest.
And you have to wonder if they're refusing. Well, then let them put a figure to it, Patricia. Let them clarify whether or not these are their policies. Last weekend and over the last couple of weeks, we've seen Mr Chalmers and Mr Albanese refuse to commit to the Coalition's cap on the level of taxation. If they want to have higher levels of taxation coming into government, presumably that's because they're intending to spend a lot more money as well.
Okay, they say they don't want new taxes. Let's park that. I want to talk about some other issues. There's this issue with Alan Tudge. Can you confirm that your department is negotiating more than $500,000 in a payout to his former staffer, Rochelle Miller?
I would like to be able to give you a straight answer on that, Patricia.
Because you need to.
I genuinely do not get briefed or provided with information on what are confidential employee settlements between ComCover and the relevant entities of government negotiating with former employees across government.
This is public money,
arm's length from ministers,
and it relates to cabinet ministers. Will it be public?
I understand, Patricia. That is not a matter within my control. It is a matter that, indeed, individuals party to such negotiations or discussions may wish to make their own discussions or statements, but I do not receive briefings on that. I do not be involved in any of those negotiations. The agencies handle those independent of ministers or politicians. And I suspect many people would say it would be terribly inappropriate if I was brought to the table to have a say in those sorts of negotiations or settlements.
Is this... You must know some elements of this, Minister, given it is you're the Finance Minister. I know she had multiple employers. Does this pertain to Michaela Cash or Alan Tudge?
Again, Patricia, I don't get provided with details of the claim, the nature of the claims, or the negotiated settlements. These are matters, obviously, if it was a Labor staffer, for example, and we do get claims against staffers from all political parties, if it was a Labor staffer, for example, people would think it was particularly inappropriate for a Liberal minister to be briefed on it. And so this is why these matters are handled. Confidentiality is important for the individuals involved.
That's really convenient, though, isn't it?
It would be much easier in these interviews. Well, you can say that, Patricia.
Well, it's how it feels. And the public thinks that's half a million dollars. Public money.
And Patricia, I think you know that I prefer to be able to provide direct answers to questions wherever I can. But in this instance, no matter how much I might ask my department, you know, the principles and the protocols are in place there.
If the payout,
if the Labor Party want those changed, well, they can call for those to be changed.
If the payout for Rochelle Miller does relate to the Tudge employment in his office, should he remain in cabinet?
Well, Patricia, in terms of his role in cabinet, that matter has been the subject of two clear review processes now. They have found no known breaches there of the ministerial standards. And so it's on that basis that, that the Prime Minister's formed his judgment.
Finally, the Prime Minister has backed a campaign by a Liberal candidate to ban transgender people from playing female sports. Do you want trans women excluded?
No, Patricia, and I don't think that's what anybody is calling for. These are sensitive issues.
That's exactly what the Prime Minister called for.
What we have is that there are some sporting bodies, women's sporting bodies, who are keen to ensure the safety or integrity of their competitions. That should be respected as a genuine consideration on their part. It's equally important to ensure that the rights of individuals and the rights of individuals of different gender identities are also respected and considered. That's why I say these are sensitive issues, and if there is to be any exploration of them further through parliamentary committees, inquiries or legislation, I trust it will have full and proper consideration of them and be very sensitive and considerate in the
way. So you won't support laws that try to ban transgender women from playing female sport?
I would expect that that any such laws would be the subject of proper parliamentary consideration through committee processes and the like, and that we would all benefit from ensuring that we looked carefully at the evidence and information as to how they could be considered.
So you don't share the views that you need new laws here?
Patricia, I'm saying that there are issues raised that I can understand the concerns of women's sporting bodies in relation to the safety and integrity.
We have federal laws. Andrew Bragg has said, he's a Liberal senator today, there are federal laws in the Sex Discrimination Act which protect sport. Why do we need new laws, Minister?
Patricia, I'm not advocating for or against, and these are sensitive matters, and if they are to be explored, they should be explored properly with sensitivity through parliamentary committee processes. And
so why is the PM mentioning it in the election campaign?
With any legislative proposal.
Why is the PM mentioning it?
He got asked about it, Patricia.
He said he supports it.
He got asked about it,
Patricia. But he said he supports it.
I think again, if you look, he's indicated support in terms of consideration of these sorts of issues. Any type of legislation or proposal would have to go through all of those proper processes.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Patricia. My pleasure.
Finance Minister Simon Birmingham there.